Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions. Whether you need a new warehouse line, hedging, or are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lincoln on Lending, David Lincoln.
Welcome, everybody. Happy Monday to you. Did you catch that Super Bowl? It was probably one of the best Super Bowls I'd had a chance to look at in a while. I enjoyed it immensely. Welcome back to work. Congratulations to the Saints. Well coached. I love that game. It was just, there's so many aspects about it that was just really a real thrill. And speaking of real thrill, we've got a program for you today that is going to just be over the top. We're thrilled to have you in. We have people calling in from all over the country. We welcome you. And also an increasing number of you are connecting with the Blog Talk website and gaining access to the program via the Internet. However you do, we appreciate you listening, and we would love to have you send us information. Email me, if you would, at D as in David, L-Y-K-K-E-N, at MortgageBankingSolutions.com. I want to hear how you're listening to us. I love your feedback. We do get a lot of emails, but we're really trying to get a gauge on how many people are listening across the country. So welcome your emails, or you can Twitter me. You send me a Twitter comment at David Lincoln, David, and the last name L-Y-K-K-E-N. Look forward to having you. And we have a real great program lined up today. We are going to be talking later in the program about using the social media for prospecting, marketing, and your sales, and how to build your sales through the social media networks. But first, as we do every week, let's get to the top of the program and find out what's going on in the world of rates. So far, thank you so much for helping us stay up on all of this.
Yeah.
What's
going
this on morning, out there, Joe?
We're down a little bit this morning. No real reason for it. Yeah, the MBS prices are down about 4/32, which, it's just kind of reversing some of what happened last week. There's been no real economic news today to move things. The stock market's essentially flat. But, last week we couldn't say the same thing. Well, it was it was a good week for mortgage rates and not a very good week for the stock market. We saw for the week about a half a point improvement in mortgage prices, which equates to an 8 to 10, 12 basis point improvement in mortgage rates. The Dow was not so fortunate. They lost a couple of hundred points, or the Dow lost a couple of hundred points. And all that seemed to stem from concern, not U.S. concern, like all the conversations been of late, but global concerns, especially European Union countries. The concern, there's been an increasing concern about the ability of certain of the smaller European countries to honor their debt obligations, most specifically Greece and Spain. And what that concern created was a bit of a flight to quality. It caused people to have second thoughts, I guess, about some of their stock investments and the ability to see stock prices improve and caused the sell-off in stocks and a purchase of U.S. Treasuries, U.S. mortgage-backed security agency, mortgage-backed securities. So, that concern, depends on how that all plays out as to whether or not it creates a real issue. Wasn't too long ago we talked about concerns about China slowing their economy down. We saw something similar. So, we'll wait and see. Last week, though, we did see the jobs report. An important announcement and indicator of where the economy may be. And last week's jobs report was a little bit of a disappointment as it measured the number of jobs created, or in this case, the number of jobs lost. The economists were expecting about a 10,000 job creation month in January, and the measurement came in at a 20,000 job loss month. But the good thing was, Dave, that the unemployment rate improved.
Yes, that was really encouraging to see. I mean, it wasn't by much, but...
Well, it improved from 10% down to 7.9%, and that really equates to about 500,000 difference in the measurement of the unemployment rate. So, a significant change, and what stands out is that there are two methods of two different sources create these two reports. One's doing the jobs report, and it's measuring the number of jobs increased or decreased. The other's doing the unemployment rate, which is a totally different measure. And in times of uncertainty like now, and as we're evolving from a recession to hopefully a recovery, you start seeing some differences in these reports. And so the market seemed to appreciate the unemployment rate as a more telling tale than the miss of 30,000 jobs. The miss of 30,000 jobs is not a real big deal. Don't know if we have you, Dave.
No, I think I just got a flag there, Joe, that we did just lose Dave for a minute.
Okay.
So,
well,
I was very interested in that. It was interesting when you brought up about the comments regarding the change in the European markets. That was making the news over the weekend.
That really was. And we got to hope that the world economies continue to improve or do improve, since they're such an important outlet for our products. So it's a global economy. Do we have you back, Dave?
Yeah, I don't know what happened. I was adding comment. It was there, so I lost the connection. I apologize.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'll go on. The next week coming up this week, we have really only two things to note that are economic events that are on the calendar. We got the retail sales report comes out on Thursday, which is a significant event and is a pretty good indicator of the movement of the economy. And then we have the 3 and the 10 and 30-year auctions just this week, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, respectively. The 10 and 30-year auction are likely to have some influence on mortgage rates, as the longer-term fixed-rate instruments are very similar to the majority of loans being made right now, in that they're 30-year fixed-rate loans. Bernanke speaking, he's going to testify before the House Financial Services Committee on Wednesday. And,
don't you know that's going to have some, all ears are going to be focused on just the way he phrases every word.
And he's speaking specifically to the unwinding of the programs, the stimulus programs that were put in place. And that means he's going to be talking about the MBS purchase program. He and everybody else seems to be talking about the end of the MBS purchase program. Last week, the Fed purchased $12 billion in mortgage-backed securities, which is about the same as what they had purchased in the previous week, so no real change there. They only have, if they're going to stop it at $1.25 trillion, they have about $75 billion to go, and over the remaining 8 weeks, that means that their average is going to be something less than 10%, so I think we should see them gradually reduce that 12%. But I don't know if you saw this, Dave. It's pretty ironic. early in the week, one of the Freddie Mac you'll recall going back to Christmas Eve, the administration announced that they were going to expand the abilities to they were going to lift the limit on the support of Fannie and Freddie. And
that's right.
At the time, they also talked about, this would give them a chance to buy back loans, kind of take some of the pressure off. Well, there's also been speculation that a purpose in that was to position Fannie and Freddie to be the new buyer of MBS. When the Fed stopped buying, maybe Fannie and Freddie would be the new buyer of MBS. And so early this last week, one of the Freddie executives made a comment about expanding the portfolio, maybe needing to increase the portfolio by investing in MBS. Well, the next day, the regulator of Freddie Mac came out and said, Fannie and Freddie are not going to buy MBS. So
you just wonder if which hand knows, which one to we should be going with. I think that there's an encouraging sign there, the fact that Freddie Mac looks and maybe signaling that as a possibility. The regulators came in
and start speaking, and you really wonder what the agenda is behind that regulator speaking, trying to maintain policy, we're not going to do it. But, you know, I think sometimes you almost get wondering, Joe, if the things that they very much go out and deny isn't the very things that they're planning on. If that wasn't a trial balloon of sorts going out to see what's going to happen. Something else that we talked about on the pre-call, the pre-program call, that I think is significant, may not affect a lot of people, was those with their loans, the adjustable rate loans, tied to the coffee. Talk about what happened this week. That's pretty significant.
Well, coffee is a measure that comes out monthly, and it takes a long time to do it. So it's like 2 months in arrears, but what is identified as the coffee index now is going to be the thing, the index to which a lot of loans are tied, and those coffee indexed loans that are still performing are going to see an unexpected increase. And the reason is that the coffee is developed by the weighted average cost of funds of borrowing of the of a number of institutions that make up the 11th district of the, I think it's the Thrift Supervision, the OTS supervised institutions in the 11th district, which is primarily California. And included in that had been Wachovia. Is that right? Yes, yeah, Wachovia.
That's right. That's Wachovia.
And so as Wachovia, you know, the migration from being Wachovia to being acquired by Wells Fargo was completed, Wachovia's liabilities were taken out of that calculation. The interest paid on their liabilities was taken out of that calculation, and this is the first month's index that reflects that. So it jumped from 1.26% to over 2%, you know, in one measure. All the other indexes are either flat or lower. So the coffee has been an interesting index because it's been so low. You know, those who had coffee loans have had fairly low rates. But look for an increase, coffee. Borrowers out there, it's going to come. It's about an 80 basis point increase between the rate announced in December and the rate announced in January.
That is significant. Thank you so much, Joe, for bringing that. We'll talk about that later. We've got someone in joining us in the broadcast later on, Brian Brady from San Diego. He's got some thoughts on how that may or may not affect the market, but I think it's an important index and something we want to pay attention to. Joe, thank you so much for bringing the rates. We'll be right back after this word.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS QuoteLand delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect and know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS QuoteLand, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS QuoteLand today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Good to have you back. And by the way, we are having a downpour out here in Central Texas. I don't know if you hear it, but our producer thought it was static on the line. I said, no, that's rain. We're getting a deluge here. So anyway, talk about getting rained on. Alice, there's a lot going on in the legislative world out there again, and there's some. Tony did a good job. Good to have you back, by the way. I hope you had a great vacation down there in the Florida Keys.
Yes, we did. Thank you. Hey, just be happy it's not snow because we're about to get dumped with about 10 inches, so I hear. So.
Well, I'm flying off to New York City and Washington, D.C. this week, so it's. I know I'm going to be seeing some of that, so we'll enjoy the rain while we got it. Alice, give us an update. Tony did a good job last week of covering a lot of things that are going on in the legislative initiative. Would you give us a rundown again in this segment and let our listeners know? And by the way, for those of you that are tuning in for the first time, we purpose in these first two segments to kind of be hard-hitting, hit to the information that's really significant, and then in the Hot Topic segment, we kind of kick back, pour up a cup of coffee, and really more visit on the issues, a lot of these issues. So, Alice, take it away.
Well, I'll tell you folks that what we're going to do now is really try and separate for you the legislative pieces and the proposed and final rules, because right now it does seem the final rules are the things we want to pay attention to the most. The legislative front, we certainly have out there, but there's been no activity the last couple of weeks. We have the H.R. 4173, which is the Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act. This is the one that has the skin in the game provision that people are concerned about, with the phrasing in it that would require a lender to retain 5% and potentially less or ownership within a mortgage, within a loan that is sold, and then obviously, and then phrasing incorporating the fact that it may be a high risk. So trying to identify, is it just high risk loans that we would have to retain a portion of it? Is it all loans? All of that still to be debated. That bill passed the House back in December, so we've been waiting for the Senate Banking Housing and Urban Affairs Committee to come up with a date that they're going to mark up a bill. They may take Senator Dodd's previous draft of a version of this legislation and work with that. They may take this 4173 and work with it. We're still watching for that. So we'll see more in the weeks ahead. You may be aware of H.R. 4461, the Banking Integrity Act of 2010. Which people have referred to this, the Volcker rule, which we've discussed it a couple times on previous shows, about this trying to separate commercial banking from investment banking. So it would bar banks from owning or investing or sponsoring kind of hedge funds, private equity funds. No movement on that. No movement on any of the too big to fail pieces of legislation that have been out there. I will tell you, have a heads up, the SAFE Act final rule, the draft final rule, was published in December. The NCUA, FDIC, OCC, OTS, and the Farm Credit Administration, all of them are looking at, will the banks have some form of SAFE Act legislation that they have to follow? There's a big technology hurdle that has to get over there with an NMLS, the National Mortgage Licensing System, and so we'll wait and see what's going to become of that. That's got some big technology hurdles, as well as all those agencies trying to decide if they're going to move forward. Most, like I mentioned a minute ago, it's the final rules. We're all anxiously waiting to see what's going to happen. So we had a final rule we're waiting to hear on the loan officer compensation that's built into the Regulation Z changes. The Reg Z changes incorporate changes for ARM disclosures, but people are focused on what's going on with the loan officer compensation proposed rule. We're still waiting. They had lots of comments that they have to review. So we can talk about that in our hot topic again as well. We are reviewing the final rule for the risk-based pricing disclosure. This is 100 pages. This one, we have a new form, folks, January 1st, 2011 applications. I know by the time you hang up the phone, you're going to forget. So we'll be reminding you on future shows. We'll talk a little bit about how do we issue a risk-based pricing disclosure to a consumer and what defines risk-based pricing, all that to come out and be a little better defined going forward. So those are our main things. Oh, I'm sorry, one last thing. HUD, appraiser independence, that mortgagee letter still slated for February 15th implementation, unless FHA comes out with something this week to say they can't get the technology up and running, because that's really what we're waiting for. Dave, are you still there?
Sorry there. I muted it for a minute. I forgot to put it back on. I started to say in the SAFE Act, you know what? We listened to what a Freddie Mac exec comes out and makes a statement about, and then you look at that one regulator coming back and, you know, negating what they're saying. Now look at the SAFE Act. You have 5 agencies, the NCUA, the FDIC, the OCC, the OTS, and the FCA, and I cannot imagine they're all going to get on one page. What's even more amazing, Alice, they did it on 102 pages.
Well, I know, and one of the biggest contentions seems to be define a small community bank that would be exempt. You know, they're trying to say, well, if I'm a loan officer at a community bank and I do less than 5 loans a year, do I have to be licensed? Other entities are coming back saying, well, don't make it a per loan basis, make it a dollar threshold. So, you know, they're trying to find a way for the small banks to still get out of it.
Well, as we are always so grateful, you taking the time to read huge amounts of volume of information out there to bring this information to us each week. Thank you so much, Alice. Good to have you back from vacation, and we will be right back after this break.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals,
providing classroom and web-based delivery,
and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record, performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees, both live and online, on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here's David Lickin.
Good to have you back. And we are really fortunate today to have a special guest with us, Brian Brady from San Diego, California. One of my favorite parts of the country. I lived out there. I had two mortgage banking companies out in that area, Brian. Good to have you on the program today.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be with you all, David. It's exciting to hear what you guys are doing, and it's I think what you're bringing to the industry is just fabulous in both the economic, legislative, and then, of course, some marketing tips for folks.
Yeah, well, that's the purpose of the program today. Folks, we've got Brian. He is rated by Google as America's number one mortgage broker. And, of course, what do you do when you hear something like that? You run to Google and you Google his name to see if he comes up to the surface at the top. But Brian is a 19-year veteran of the financial services industry. He's been with Merrill Lynch as a financial advisor. He graduated from this little school out there, Villanova University. We always harass our Villanova grads that we know out there. He's from the East Coast up there in Philadelphia area. He moved out west in 1992, and you know what? A lot of people don't leave San Diego once they get there, Brian. Good to have you with us. We're going to be talking about what you're doing. We're really interested in hearing about what you're specifically doing to increase your business. We've got loan officers dialed in from all over the nation, ready to hear the latest tips. How are you using the social medias, and specifically in your case, blogging, to really build your business?
Well, I guess the best way to describe it is when I kind of happened into using social new media. Let's call it new media. Using new media by mistake, and back in 2004 when I went back into production, I recognized that the old ways of doing business, and that was going around real estate offices with flyers and donuts, on the one hand, and then consumer direct cold calling. We're dead because of the do not call legislation and because the real estate industry went through a change and the agents didn't go into the office anymore. They all worked out of home. As home buyers went online, I recognized that I need to develop an online footprint and I need to find a way to connect with lots of realtors. I had moved here from Phoenix in 2003, so I went back into production literally as a start-over rookie. I didn't know anybody. I had no realtor contacts. So I had to come up with a strategy that was going to work quickly because I had to, you know, pay for my daughter's tuition and pay the mortgage and so forth.
Yeah.
And I had to find a way that was effective and also legal, too.
Yeah, that's a good way to go about it. Alice is always interested in people doing it right.
Well, you know, remember, we had the do not call legislation, and I didn't know anybody. So the first place I turned was a social network called LinkedIn. And I found that I could look for various affinity keywords in searching on LinkedIn and find other Villanova graduates in Southern California. I could find people that were associated with my church. I could find people that were Arizona Cardinals fans. I mean, I could find lots of unique little snippets of information and connect with people via LinkedIn. And then, bingo, I knew I could give them a call and talk to them about mortgages.
That is so. You started using your first entree into the social networks was LinkedIn. I use it extensively, and then has that grown beyond that?
It hasn't. LinkedIn, unfortunately, made a lot of mistakes, in my opinion. They got outsmarted by some other social networks, and LinkedIn is where I would spend a limited amount of time, and I do now. But it worked very well in 04 and 05.
Well, are you finding that, you know, you need to use all of them? Is there some that you prefer more or some techniques that are working a little bit better for you than other techniques that you've tried?
I believe, you know, what you always want to be looking at is, you know, where are, you know, John Dillinger, when he robbed all the banks, they asked him why he robbed the banks, and he said, you know, that's where the money was, right? So you want to find out where the people are and find out where your customers are, and it's going to differ for each originator. But I have found that Facebook is probably the best platform for an originator to go right now, because most of their friends, family, and colleagues are on there one way or another.
Yeah. Well, let's talk before we get to. I want to get so deep in this, and I know Alice and Joe have a list of questions. I'll invite them to jump in here. But how does social media in the mortgage industry differ from other industries, Brian?
Well, you know, I my approach is going to be different than what the experts tell you. And the experts, of course, in this field have been at it for 6 months. But
it's a great comment.
So all I can tell you is what works for originators, because it worked for me. And I really look at it as I try very hard to look at new media and the way we're doing business today and equate it to the way we did business 10 years ago. And I use all the social media as a prospecting tool. The cornerstone of my social media strategy is the blog. The blog is something I've had since 2004, and an independent blog since 2006. And what it does is it allows you to establish credibility and expertise through the written word or through video.
Yes.
So that's sort of the business card or brochure, if you will.
Well, how about the value of a blog versus a Facebook, I would assume, comes back to Google searches or SEO, search engine optimization. People are more likely to find you as a result of a blog versus just having a Facebook page, which I agree with your comment. Facebook page is having some information, connecting with family and friends. But your network to support a sustainable business has got to be a lot broader than that. So it's important that that people can do the Google searches or Bing searches or whichever search engine you want to use to look you up. Is the blog the key way to do that?
Well, I think the blog is a starting point, and there's a few reasons why. Because what you're doing is you're operating in a way that Google can see you. And the nice thing about blogs is it really does demonstrate your expertise, and I think that's so important. It's the business card isn't the right word. It's probably the online. It's the online equivalent of what we would have as brochure in the past or consumer help guides in the past. So I've got probably 600 or 700 blog posts over the past 5 years up there talking about various information, and Google is searching and indexing that information. So I am able to dominate the search engine results for some of the niche loan product that I specialize in.
Does Google track statistics, or how are they really differing from Bing? I mean, a lot of people, Bing's getting a lot of press. In fact, it's interesting, one of my clients up in Bellevue, Washington, his wife was key member of the Bing team and launched Bing. How do these other search engines enter into the picture? We always just, you know, it's like Google's become like Kleenex. Kleenex is a tissue, but it's because it's a product, we refer generically to search engine as Googling it.
How do you compare the two? It's, you know, which would you rather be relevant in? I mean, most of the world still uses Google, so I think I'd want to dominate Google.
But it doesn't matter.
You don't really pursue this by trying to dominate Google. That's a byproduct of the efforts that you do. And Bing will be a byproduct.
Really good point. That's really a good point.
So, Brian, this is Alice. I have a question. You know, so when you're working with your blogs, do you look at this also as not just a way to prospect, but also a way to maintain connectivity with clients you've closed loans on? Do you have some suggestions or recommendations on that side of it? Now as the loan's closed, do you continue to use those areas for that customer as well?
Well, I mean, the nice thing is if you're pursuing if you've got permission to market to that customer via email marketing, blog posts are excellent content for your email marketing newsletters. Rather than buying one of the prepackaged newsletters that so many vendors have, your customers really are going to find that if you're giving personal commentary, you're going to become more important to them. So that's one of the nice things you can do with it. And connecting with them on various social networks is really a key thing because it keeps your top-of-mind status. Alice, if you and I are connected on Facebook and I keep popping up in your stream, you know, it's just going to be one more opportunity to stay in top-of-mind status with you.
That's a really good point. We're getting some emails in that I'm going to ask some questions from right now, Brian, if we wouldn't mind. Joe, I know you got some feedback or some thoughts on this as well. But there are the, let's go through the various social networks. We talked Facebook. We've talked in LinkedIn. What other ones are that are on your radar screen? Is Twitter something that is gaining in prominence? Is it something that you're using? Or just, you know, where does that stack up in the line of social networks?
You know, Twitter is growing quickly, and, you know, as quickly as Twitter is growing, Facebook is growing faster. Twitter's great. There's nothing wrong with learning how to use it, but, again, as fast as Twitter grows, and, you know, Twitter brags about how many people they add every single day, but Facebook adds, like, 10 times as much. Facebook is I think, the third largest country in the world, if you looked at all the users on it.
Wow. That's a great way to look at it too. Is, you know, you're literally, you know, they're citizens of these things, and they're becoming, they become members of this community, and so that's interesting. And some of the things that are being done on that. I mean, as far as MySpace, I think they're trumping MySpace. We're seeing MySpace begin to fade away. And I know you're not an expert. You're using these tools, so you're not necessarily an expert in predicting which ones they are, but. Is I'm starting to use Twitter more and more for more of a post and a blast, a quick note out. That seems to be the real value of a Twitter, is getting, you know, like what Joe's doing, Joe Farr and the folks at NBS Quote Line, getting a quick, you know, burst out about what's happening with a rate or a short sentence.
Well, that's how I started on Twitter. I mean, you know, when Twitter first came out, I tried to look at this thing and say, well, what good is this? And I found that the only thing I could do was to post morning and afternoon rates advice, if you will. And that was to suggest, you know, the market's up, the market's down, I'm locking, I'm floating. And my Twitter name is @mortgagereport. And that was, you know, designed to let people follow me. And I used to try to steer realtors to my Twitter stream so that they could see I was on top of the rate. Any social media you use, David, is the idea is that you're demonstrating your expertise in an open, transparent way. And if people can see you doing that on Twitter, it's just one more chance they have to see that you're an expert.
Yeah, I think it is. And, you know, as we watch the demographics of our country change, as we watch the next generation's influence really float up to us older folks. I'm 59. I'm looking at your picture on the internet here. By the way, you can go to Brian's website. It's www.mortgagenewsdaily.com. You can go into it and look at his information and take a look at it. But I'm noticing my kids, who got us exposed to Facebook and a lot of the networks that are out there, and I'm seeing the influence, it's bleeding back up into us old folks, and we're starting to use it more effectively and more regularly as it relates to communicating with friends and family that, you know, we've moved around the country like you have, and it is so effective to reconnecting and maintaining those relationships. LinkedIn, on the other hand, is seeming to be worked more at the professional level, and I think it's important to have a good mix in using both.
Using all three. I mean, David,
well,
actually,
all three, yes.
Yeah, I would say we're all seven. I mean, whenever people come to me, they say, should I go on Facebook or LinkedIn or Twitter? And I always go, why do you have or in there? Why not just use all three and just have a different effort for each one of them?
Yeah, and the nice thing about LinkedIn – go ahead, Joe. Jump in there, please.
No, I just wondered, how much time do you invest a day or a week in managing these networks and blogs?
It's a good point. That's a good question. You know, I probably spend anywhere between 10 and 20 hours a week working on this. This is the and I'm in maintenance mode right now. An online effort is not for the faint of heart. It requires a substantial amount of time investment if you're to do it correctly. So nurturing relationships, I mean, but this is really an originator's job. Originator's job is to hunt, find, nurture. And you can do that online, and you can do it ethically, responsibly, and legally, but it does require time. And if you're not going to put that commitment into it, I'd suggest don't even waste your time.
Brian, you know, as I listen to all this, I think it's great that individuals can, you know, be able to manage these. Sometimes I think it's a little nerve-wracking how when you look at a staff, say you've got 50 loan officers, you've got a couple of them that really want to grab onto this, and then you have a couple who go, no way, I've got my same old way, I want to operate. So as a company, I think there's a couple of things to address. Is there a company image that we expect people to present, and how do you try and manage that? Is there a company policy that you have issued or that you follow, or is it just you're on your own idea and the other loan officers aren't down the same path?
Well, I think that's going to be the big question in the next few years. And that's a great question, Alice, because if I owned a company and had 50 originators, I'd be concerned about how they were acting too. So, but I'd also be concerned about what they were saying when they were out there talking to people.
Oh, sure. Are they accurate? Yeah, there's a lot going on.
The only difference between the online world and, you know, someone on a sales call is that in the online world, it's in print and it stays there forever. Sure. I mean, you know, that you're going to be concerned about that. What's a good policy? Hire the right people, I guess. I mean, you know, and fire the ones that are bad. I don't know. Certainly I'm watching banks, I'm watching lending institutions develop written policies that say you can and can't, you can go here and you can't go there. And I'm watching their employees break them already. So, I mean, it's, you know, I think, you know, good taste and acting online like you would act in person is probably a good rule of thumb.
So whose information is it in your eyes? If you're my employee loan officer and you're working on my time, sitting at my, whether it's the company desk or you're remote, but you're on my time, because whether I'm paying you on commission or salary, it's, you know, our nickel, and are you then, whose information is that? And who does that belong to, for example, if you're saying, well, here's this great info sheet about FHA loans that, you know, I'm going to post and pass out to people. Or the company issues a policy about, you know, certain underwriting or other criteria or product information. You know, who owns that? How do you draw that line?
I don't know. I think that's defined as the employer-employee relationship in a contract. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I can't imagine the benefit of an employer cracking down and stealing an originator's content if you were to leave to work for another company, because that originator would just go online and talk about it. So,
right.
I mean, that's the double-edged sword that we get when banks or lenders or companies try to crack the whip. In the online world, fortunately, free speech still reigns. So if that bank cracked down and said, oh, Brian, you know, you can't write this, and you're fired, and we're taking all your content, I would just wake up the next morning and say, guess what? Here's a new blog. And
I think that's a real concern. Joe, you used to work for a large financial institution. You were president of one. And I know this was a real issue for you in dealing with regulators. And because the difference here, Brian, is you have a bank has got an exposure here. They got the big balance sheet, so if something is misstated or stated as perceived to be inaccurate, it creates a liability for the financial institution. So I'm sympathetic to it. Joe, weigh in on this issue. How is this going to be harder for bank loan officers to be able to go out and create the blogs and be on these social internet, these internets? And should the bankers, the management of these banks, be concerned about what they're posting?
No question that. The bank I came from is no longer around, so I don't know if they're a good example. But the rules that were enforced at the time had to do with websites and the anxiety that was created over did a loan officer have a personal website out there, and you know, it's kind of like a blog, I guess, and the enforcement, the policies and procedures required that there be policemen inside the bank watching for anyone's name to pop up anywhere on the internet. And it was just
You know, it eliminated the ability to use that tool at the time for marketing at a time when it was what everyone else was using, and it's kind of like we're there now. And I expect that the big banks will have a hard time controlling their representatives' participation on blogs as individuals, or you know, maybe they don't use their corporate affiliations. But our guys were watching for anyone's name. I mean, if it showed up in the news in the local paper, they found it and wanted to know why it wasn't approved first.
Yeah, there have been policies that are a paragraph, and there's policies that are, you know, 50 pages.
Yep.
I think
that's
this is
really
going to be really...
That's really great news for me. I mean, I couldn't be happier to see big banks crack down on their sales representatives from using these marketing tools.
Brian, we talked about it earlier where the you know, the policies regarding the proposed rules regarding loan officer compensation seem to be very hurtful to the entrepreneurial spirit of the business, and certainly policies like what I experienced and what we're talking about here are the same thing as it relates to those that are inside the big bank structures, and so maybe that does shift some of the advantage. I know there have been lots of advantages removed from the broker side of things, but this is certainly one of the reasons that brokers have survived and thrived for so long.
Joe, you are so right on it, and we're going to cover that in the next time. We're going to take a quick break. This is such a good discussion, and based on the emails that are coming in, it is really ringing true. One guy just wrote, he says, finally, something redeeming so I can stay as a broker. I want to stay in business. I don't want to work for a bank for this very reason. Stay tuned. We're going to have more on this discussion, and we'll be right back.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
Whether you need a new warehouse line or making the transition from broker to banker, are interested in mergers and acquisitions,
or anything in between, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Good to have you back. This is David Licken with Licken on Lending, and we're into a really great discussion about, is this now turning the advantage to the independent originator? And it sounds like, Brian, this is in fact beginning to do just that.
Good. I couldn't be happier. Now, the only thing, I expect eventually independent originators and brokers will be so successful at this that they'll have to legislate against our speech. So that's the only thing I can think of them to do to even the playing field.
But you'll have a lot of people on your side for that one, for fighting that. So I think.
Amen.
That.
All right.
Well, I think when you start go ahead.
I might offer this to the originator that sent that question in there. I might just offer this advice, who said it sounds like this is a reason to stay as a broker. I might suggest that your independence and your thought is really your parcel in trade. Your expertise,
yes,
and your ability to negotiate loans for customers, for banks, and if you're doing it responsibly, ethically, and legally, this will be the greatest advantage you had over them, because this is where the customers are going, and you can absolutely thrive, and I hope you do.
Well, there's definitely been an erosion of the advantage. You know, in tennis we go add in, add out. There's been a lot of added out at disadvantages for the brokers, and a lot of folks are exiting, saying, I'm going to exit for this particular time. I tell you, these are important tools that you can use to really survive. Alice, do you see regulation really? Brian brought up a good point about regulation. Are we too going to see this, you know, get regulated, or some new type of regulation coming down at this? Isn't this really
taking
into
the
free speech issue?
No, I don't think so in the free speech issue, but what I guess I would just say that's already out there that people should be careful of is when they post things like rates that, you know, you're aware that Reg C,
oh, yes,
in terms of how rates have to appear, all that still applies even in this new media environment. And, you know, if you're staying away from that stuff and you're saying, you know, to Brian's point, you're a mortgage advisor, you've got your independent thought, you're really helping them focus on what's right for them, and just being careful that knowing where those lines are, where you now have stepped into saying something or doing something that is already under RESPA or Truth in Lending, for example, and like Brian said, do it ethically. I don't think they can regulate it any more than that, because you'd have all of the consumer advocate groups fighting for any regulation, against any regulation for how you speak on those mediums.
I think you bring up a great point, Alice, because one of the ways to begin to figure out how to self-regulate this, your activities on any of these social media networks, is to look at what's being required of you when you're on a phone conversation and or in person selling the products or disclosing the products. The same thing applies. It's a great point.
Well, I think, and Brian was saying that, you know, take what you're doing now, you know, how would you do it the old way, and you're just translating that into how you're working within these mediums.
I think one of the things, Brian, I'm looking at your activity on the blog right now. Did you have a comment? I think we may have heard you chirp in there, and I want to make sure we got your comments on that before we move on to specifically into your blog and how you're using it.
Alice is right, and I hope you're right, Alice, and I think you are. The thing I obviously want to say to people is I keep saying ethically, responsibly, and legally. Those are the things you need to do. The problem with being online is you put a big magnifying glass on yourself. So if you screw up,
yep,
it's there in print. Now, it's not the end of the world. You can correct things, and you can fix them, and you can make you can correct mistakes. But when you're talking to someone, if you make a mistake in an oral presentation, or if you misrepresent something in an oral presentation by mistake, that's no big deal. But when you do it online, it's going to be out there for everybody to see, and you know Google is going to spider it, it is going to find it, and then you're going you know, it's going to be just that that worse.
Yeah, I think that's it's just an important thing to keep in mind. A lot of people are you know, not being able to get jobs or losing jobs because of posts that they've, you know, thoughtlessly put out there on Facebook, and you know, people are looking at it, whether it be a regulator or just looking at customers. I mean, it's really critical to have a certain presence about you. Brian, this is really valuable. Talk to me about your blog. Talk to us and our listeners about your blog. And what is your objective, and how do you go about the blog? We've talked about the social media. Now you're telling me that the blog has been probably one of the more successful things that you've done for really personalizing and bringing your information forward.
First of all, my blog site is called MortgageReeksReport.com. I just sent you to a profile that was on Mortgage News Daily, which is a community site. But MortgageReeksReport.com is really where my blog is. And really what I've learned is in the online world, it is you can dominate what's called a long-tail search phrase.
Ah, yes. I've heard the term long-tail. Tell us, expand on that.
Long-tail is simply a niche, a market niche. And I'm of the opinion that having 80% market share of one specific market niche is better than having, you know, 0.2% market share on getting lost in a sea or an ocean of search terms. Give you some examples. If someone were to look at, were to Google VA-approved condos San Diego, I have to think that I'd probably pop up one, two, or three. I think if they Googled VA jumbo mortgage or VA jumbo down payment requirement, I'd probably pop up one, two, or three. If they Googled how to get an FHA offer accepted, I'd probably show up one, two, or three. And this is where I want to be. One, two, or three is the game.
So how have you been able to really – that's called search engine optimization. So you're really getting your message. You're very specific. Is it – you know, we've heard the term meta tags out there. Is it really – getting it in at that point, or is it just are the search engines putting spiders out there and looking for keywords in what you're blogging about?
Well, Google's indexing everything, so I tell you, forget SEO. I mean, you know what? It's and I don't care. And don't spend money on companies that are going to tell you they're going to get in the top of the engines. Do what you do well, and do it online.
Good point.
Operate ethically, legally, responsibly, and transparently, and pursue certain things that you do well, and you'll thrive. I'll give you another example. There's an originator named Andrew Adams who works for a bank in Massachusetts, and he is a colleague of mine over on Mortgages Unzipped, which is Zillow's blog. Andrew is not, or said a year ago to me, he's nervous about blogging. He was new to it. If you Google renovation financing, I would venture to say that Andrew pops up as number three or four, or two, three, or four for the term renovation financing, second only to Wells Fargo. What a world we live in that a little originator from Massachusetts that works for a community bank can compete against a giant behemoth like Wells Fargo just by putting out good, relevant information to the consumer.
Interesting.
Does that make sense?
So, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, does that make sense to you guys to understand why you want to pursue these long-tail searches and do what you do well, and the specialties tend to be where you want to dominate?
Yeah, it sure does. And man, Joe, I mean, seems to make sense. We're also, in fact, we're talking about this ourselves. How do we can get more people finding us out there? Joe, you start.
You know, we're late to the game, and we're starting to try to create a communication link. And the thing that struck me as being relevant and easier to understand the benefits. I have a hard time seeing the benefit of building a tweet following, or you know, I don't quite know how to use LinkedIn and things like that. But it does make great sense to me that
yes.
You could do things that get yourself at the you know, on the Google search. And Brian, you pointed that out that may be the more important aspect of what you write in your blog. Certainly, you want to be impressive in what you write in your blog, but the ability to utilize those words to be the reason people find you, and that's kind of striking home as that's a very tangible benefit I can see from all this.
Okay, let me contradict myself now, Joe. All right, because while as good as that is, I can't think of this, and that's a mistake we all make. I mean, I'm a great hunter. I'm a natural. I mean, I just love to go out hunting for new business. So much to the fact that I forget to farm the people that love me already. And this is what the social networks will do for you, Joe, and for everybody, is if you're connected with, and I invite people to look at a webinar I did last year, just Google my name, Brian Brady, plus LinkedIn webinar, or Brian Brady plus Facebook webinar, and you'll see what I did about a year ago to become a better farmer rather than hunter. Because these are the people that love you and intend to refer business to you. So if I were you, Joe, on MBS Quoteline, I'd be saying, okay, the first thing I want to do is be connected on four or five various social networks with all of my customers because I want to retain them. And then after I've done that, do I want to start the hunting process?
I got you.
And I did it backwards, Joe. I did it backwards. So there's no reason you can't do both at the same time, though.
Okay.
Alice, you've got any comments as we go? There's a couple of news items that I think that are popping up out there that I want to talk about as we wrap up the program that I think are significant, and we should be fine as encouraging. But, Alice, do you have anything before we let Brian go here for the day?
Oh, no, I just hope everybody just takes very seriously what Brian's talking about, because I was surprised. To me, it's just so intuitive and makes so much sense and something that absolutely every salesperson out there should be grasping, finding their expertise, and implementing these types of, you know, marketing ideas. It's amazing to me when you bring this up to so many people, they go, well, I don't really think I need this, and I think Brian's done a great job of proving what a benefit it can be.
I think it's really good.
It's like television in the 50s, Alan.
There's no question that this is something that we need to be paying attention to. And if you are considering any kind of referral-based program, it is essential that you understand how to use these. Brian, you've begin to shed some insights into. We'd love to have you back. We've got a couple other people we're going to bring on in the next time we have you on. And let's give everyone again the address to your blog one more time.
It's www.mortgageratesreport. Rates is in plural, report singular. MortgageRatesReport.com.
Good, good, good. Well, that's a great website to get at least use as a model for yourself. The fact that Google has you, Brian, rated as America's number one mortgage broker is quite significant. There's other great blogs out there that I want to refer you to. There's Mortgage News Clips. Those of us that are in the mortgage banking industry or mortgage industry that are wanting to have one place to go read everything that's going on, probably one of the fastest growing blogs out there as it relates to just what's going on with everything about mortgages. And so I encourage you to get familiar with these blogs. They're very effective. I write for that particular blog, and I think it is so important to use these blogs effectively. You should have this as a part of your strategy. We are there are a couple of newsworthy things I want to bring out that I thought people may not have noticed. I think it is significant. Everyone's been concerned about the MBA, the Mortgage Bankers Association of America, and some of the things that have gone on there. It's been a struggle for everybody in this industry. News just popped up that they have sold the building that they're in, and that this brings some optimism. Alice, I know you brought this up as a comment. I'm relieved to see this. We want to see a healthy and vibrant MBA. They've been providing so much education. I know you write for them and a lot of their training material, but we really want to see them continue to survive. Is this good news that's coming across the wires?
Well, I think it's a tough pill to swallow to have to admit that, and I believe it was very well publicized as well that it really ended up being a short sale from what they owed versus what they were able to sell the building for. You just take your lumps, get the news out, and then, again, in the article, in the press release anyway, they did say that they're on track for a break-even budget this year. We're the same. We wish them the best. It does appear the association had to do it in order to be able to stay viable.
I think it's there was a lot of people talking about that real estate transaction when they did it. They expanded like so many with optimism looking forward, and it came back to bite them. So I'm glad to hear that that is there. I heard it also referred to as a short sale, and so there's some negative aspects about that. But if it stops the leakage, so to speak, and gets them back into a point where they can survive, that's great news. Joe, Alice, anything else that is significant that we want to discuss before we exit the program today? We've got 2 minutes remaining.
Joe, go ahead.
I had one last question for Brian, if he's still on, and that would be to those people out there that are listening to this and kind of not knowing what to do next. Is there a very first step that you recommend? Maybe Brian got off.
Maybe Brian got off. I can go ahead and let you know. There are some services out there that offer some real good startup training on those areas.
Yes, there are. And I'll tell you, just dive in. These are not that difficult. If you don't have a LinkedIn account, get one. You can connect with me. I've got a good following. Twitter also is another one. Alice, I know you have both Twitter. You have a number of other the networks that you're using. Get started by signing up at LinkedIn.com. Or you can also use Plaxo. That's another one from a professional side. Get in and use Facebook. It's there. It's not that tough. Get it started. Also, I want to just say we want you to tune in next week. We've got an excellent program. Glenn Corso will be back with us. We're excited to have Glenn. And then at the end of the month, we're going to have, on the 22nd, Mercy Jimenez coming back talking about the covered bonds. And so it's so good to have them here and bring us relevant information. We're here to help you stay up on all that's going on. We welcome your feedback. A special thank you to Andy Alvey for being a producer and to Blog Talk Radio for making all this possible. Everyone have a great week. Email me with your comments. Let me know what you think of the program. Love to hear from you.
This has been Lincoln on Lending. a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lincoln of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. On the web at www.mortgagebankingsolutions.com. Today's guests were Joe Farr and Scott Sanderson from MBS Quote Line, delivering live mortgage-backed security prices as trades happen, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U, your ultimate education and information resource. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.